for allowing me to talk today about my work in the bilingual, bicultural model we have developed working with deaf people in the hospice setting. Recognition of ASL as a language has increased significantly, but the vast majority of Americans still do not understand that ASL has no connection whatsoever to English. ASL is a visual manual language. It's our second language. And we have no written form of our language. Reading and writing in our second language for anyone, even people with a master's degree, is at best challenging, if not overwhelming. When hospice staff do not have this rudimentary understanding of our culture and language, it automatically places deaf patients in a more vulnerable position at the end of life. At the end of life, if deaf people are forced to function in English, it places enormous stress on them, and it goes against the philosophy of hospice, which states that patients have a right to die with dignity. And it interferes significantly with a deaf person's ability to express normally and therefore reduces their self-esteem. So here we are now in the 21st century. ASL is still looked at as the third most used language in the United States. It is the second most often requested language for interpreters in major hospitals in the United States, and it is still not recognized by the U.S. government as a language, nor is it listed on the U.S. Census. Minority health departments at the state and federal levels limit their classifications of what constitutes a minority to ethnic, racial, and immigrant groups. This fact alone impacts us on the funding level, the national health research agenda, and the inclusion of deaf culture in cultural competency training for health professionals. Prior to receiving my certificate in community health work, I was a member of the leadership team of the Deaf Hospice Education. We have conducted numerous workshops throughout Minnesota, and deaf people are eager to learn. Our deaf hospice project is now in its eighth year. We have 10 deaf individuals who are trained hospice volunteers. We have developed a 45-minute videotape about hospice care and health care directives in ASL, which is sold across the country and in Canada. We have developed quick reference materials for how to work with interpreters and deaf patients. We have deaf-friendly health care directive booklet, complete with simple explanations, clip art, pictures, and forms. Last year, we received a grant to complete a best practice guidelines for how to work with deaf people in the hospice setting. And in the back of the room, there are some postcards that talk about when the release of these best practice guidelines will come out. We believe we are changing how people are cared for at the end of life. There is something bigger, however, happening in my community that borders on a cultural change. Empowered through access to health information, deaf people are more willing to volunteer and are seeing possibilities for educating and helping others. Community leadership and involvement has been key to the success of the Deaf Hospice Education Project. Now I want to share with you some of the issues that distinguish us from other cultures. And all of these points will affect the quality of care for deaf people. First, 95% of all deaf people have hearing parents, This means that the biological family members do not always share the same language. Children often have no access to a language, arrive at school with no language intact. Most deaf people 50 years and older are separated from their families to go to residential school. They have very little contact with their families. Usually it amounted to 2 weeks at Christmas and the summer vacation. Their friends became their family. Language deprivation. One study reports that hearing students arriving at school on their first day already know about 80% of the English words they will use for the rest of their lives. Deaf students with no ASL prior to school arrive at school maybe knowing around 10 words. Not 10%, but 10 words. For me, I fit into the 10-word group. Language, norms, and values of deaf culture are not passed on from generation to generation, but our culture is transmitted horizontally. Incidental information plays an important role in how people acquire and understand new information. Conversations overheard at the bus stop, in the lunchroom, on radio, or television provide background information. Deaf people have no access to this incidental information. A new study at Brown University, according to a new study led by Brown University researchers, 1 in 10 hospice patients are referred too late for services, resulting in unmet needs such as adequate pain relief or emotional support. Last month, a hospice organization contacted me about a deaf woman they admitted who had lived in a nursing home. She died 3 days later. This puts extraordinary stress on hospice staff. The same research study noted that these last-minute admissions can turn care teams into SWAT teams. And now imagine what happens when the patient in the hospice team is their first deaf patient ever. As a community health worker, I can mediate language and culture differences quickly. The health professionals are usually nervous and unsure of how to communicate with a deaf patient. Some of them think that deaf people can lip read, which is not true, and in fact, only 30% of the English is even readable on the lips. Most of us have what we call survival lip reading skills. The nurse often uses the pain chart with smiley faces. Don't look at me. Okay. It's confusing because our language has grammatically governed facial expressions to give these same faces a completely different meaning. Okay, we're going to move ahead to the case studies. Case study number one. Christina was a 29-year-old single mother of 2 young children. She was dying of colon cancer and wanted to die at home. The only way to keep Christina out of the nursing home was to have deaf hospice cover Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. 4 volunteers rotated and stayed with Christina for 4.5 months. She had 3 wishes. She wanted to die at home, she wanted to die holding her mother's hand, and to live until Christmas. She died on December 29th. Deaf hospice team members function as extended family members. They already knew the family and their background, and they were able to provide helpful insider information to hospice teams so that they could do their work better. Okay, story number 3. We'll skip 2. Lorna. One of our hospice volunteer members, she was one of the original hospice volunteer members, was placed in a nursing home due to her physical needs. Almost always, she would say, "I want to go home," meaning she wanted to go home to her son's house where she had lived. One day I went to visit her and she looked different. She seemed more relaxed, more calm, and she signed to me, "I want to go home." I immediately knew she was talking about God home and going home to God. We called the hospice team and they said, "No, you're wrong. We saw her this morning with an interpreter, and she's still talking about going home to her sons." I felt the interpreter did not catch the new home up, the location of the sign, going up, going to. Next day, I went back and I asked Lorna bluntly, "Yesterday you said you wanted to go home. Do you mean you want to go home to your son's house or where?" "Oh," she said, "I want to go home to God. I am ready. I no longer feel like I need to be here. I want to go home to God." Next case, Carolyn, 93-year-old deaf woman. Her daughter was a certified interpreter. The daughter wanted to be the caregiver and not an interpreter for her mother's last days. But it was difficult for her mother to adjust to even looking at the interpreter rather than looking at her daughter for the source of information. Her daughter had interpreted for her for all of her life. Carolyn had some dementia and would return to what we call old sign. And it was only the deaf volunteers who could understand many of these old signs that have evolved in the language. Carolyn also reacted to male nursing home staff. We think it may have been connected to the residential school experience where there was some abuse and the institutional setting of a nursing home that made the connection and made her fearful. So we asked in the nursing home change their staffing patterns so that Carolyn would not be afraid. With each patient, we always learn something and hope to do better for the next patient. The postcards in the back will give you an example of some of the best practice guidelines that we are developing for working with deaf patients. Thank you.